So, do you want to start by like going through who you are, where you're from, how long you've been playing Kendama, your Kendama journey?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Elliot Patterson dot Dama, and which is such a goofy name because I'm not like a like I only made this Instagram because Gino made me. So
Okay.
after like the first like 5 months of playing Kendama, Gino was like, "Elliot, you need to make an Instagram and post your tricks." And I was like, "Dude, I haven't posted on my like real Instagram in like a lot since like high school. Like I don't do that really." But then I kind of liked the idea of making like a Kendama scrapbook, you know, something where I can look back and like track my progress. And I kind of loved that idea. But so that was in like, I think my first post was in like May 2019. So I started grinding in January 2019. That's when I like really started. But I had like Kendama come through my middle school, you know, back in like, I don't know what, like 2012 or something like that. And like I got one and I played with it and I could do like if I really grinded for it, I could do big cup spike, small cup spike, base cup spike. So I had a little bit of like something I could pull up to lighthouse. I could pull up to stilt maybe. But then I just stopped for like
No
seven
still
years, you
trace.
know? No stilt trays. No stilt trays at that point. I couldn't get Whirlwind. I sucked at Whirlwinds. Whirlwind took me a long time to learn in 2019 when I picked it up again. Just
So
trying to learn the like two separate motions of throwing the Tama up and then flipping the Ken. That was like so hard for me. So I like knew what Kendama was, but then I just stopped for like 7 years. And then in 2019, my little brother Oliver, who is actually like really good friends with Gino and was friends with Gino like outside of Kendama. Which is kind of a funny story. He brought one on a vacation to Hawaii, and I was just like playing because Hawaii is like the best place to do Kendama, you know, just on the beach, like swing up lighthouse and whatever. And that week, I was playing his Kendama a bunch, and I was like, "All right, this is fun as shit." That was I was like a junior in college at that point.
Okay, so how old were you when you first, when you were in middle school, and then how old were you when you picked it up again?
So I was in eighth grade when I got one in middle school, and that would have been 12,
13.
13, age 12, 13, right? And then I picked it up again 21 years. So I guess it was 8 years that I didn't really do anything. And so, like, when I picked it up again at that, like, I had to learn Whirlwind. I had to learn, like, stalls. I had never done any, like, stalls or really anything. So I had to like learn everything. I had some basic cup flow, which is funny, like people who are learning Kendama don't even do that anymore. Like they just go straight to juggling the spike and shit. But I did like the cups, and I wonder if that helped me progress faster, but I'm not sure. I don't think that that helped me progress faster. I think what did is I knew how to juggle beforehand. So like I knew how to juggle three objects, I knew how to juggle two objects with one hand, and that's kind of what I tell people when they're learning to juggle is like, just get two tamas. Just get two tamas and practice that because there's so much rhythm in it that like having that intuition helps a bunch.
Right. Were you like, did you know anything about the Kendama community while you weren't playing? Like, what'd you think of Kendama? Because you it is a pretty unique story of you playing Kendama for a tiny bit, and then during that time, I imagine you'd be like, okay, I really want to play this. I just need to find the right time. Or like, what'd you think of Kendama while you
It
were not
was
playing?
like a not it was it, it just kind of exited my mind and I didn't really think about it. I had brought it again in like high school to my swim team locker room, but I kind of just like had it there and people would like fuck around with it, but I didn't really like ever do anything with it. I didn't really think of it as something that you would want to like do every day, you know, and like progress. I thought it was just like some like fuck around thing when you're just like doing nothing. Can I swear?
Yeah.
I'll try not to swear.
You're good. You're good. You're a little
But I
late,
didn't
but
really
that's fine.
like I didn't really see it as like a grinding thing, you know? That really didn't happen until 2019. And then I was like, maybe I was looking for hobbies, you know, at that point. because I was like busy with in high school and all through that, I was a swimmer. And so like that was my life, you know, like every single day was swim practice and all of that. So I would have never like gotten back from swim practice and then done like a different hobby. I already had all my time taken up. So I think maybe in college, I was at a time in my life where I was more ready to take on something that is like a grind like that.
Yeah.
And it obviously overtook me because now I've been playing for 4 years and I've taken maybe like 10 days off.
Okay. So you started again at 21, and then how old are you now? 24?
24, about to be 25 in March. Yeah.
Okay. And so when you found it again, how'd you find out that this is a thing that you can do a lot of tricks with and there's a community and you can grind?
So I knew that there was like, you asked about the community. I knew of the community. I remember back in middle school, I watched the Colin Sander Edit 7, the one to Animal by Mike Snow, you know? I remember watching that edit and I don't know how I found it or if I was like, I don't think I looked at any other videos or anything. I must have just like looked up Kendama right around when it was posted or something like that. So it was just the first thing that came up. And I remember watching that and being like, thinking it was cool, but like I said, I don't know why, but it like didn't really like inspire me to like grind, which is, I mean, I feel like a lot of people have said that that edit like inspired them. And I remember watching it, but it still wasn't enough to make me like, oh, I want to be able to do all those tricks, which is kind of weird because now I like go back and watch it and I have the nostalgia. And then I'm also like, this is like such a beautiful thing. Like all these tricks are so beautiful. I want to try and emulate that. But I didn't get that back in middle school. So I don't know. Sometimes I think about if I would have stuck with it in middle school where I'd be now, I'd be like a lot better than I am.
Yeah. I have the same thing because I didn't start until I was 21 either.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I started at 21.
And how old are you now?
28.
Okay.
So I'm older than you. So okay. I started in 2015.
Okay. Yeah. You've been playing for longer than me.
Yeah. But I wish I actually just found out that there was, as you see the newest Dama Nerds with Colin Sander.
Mm-mm. Oh, that would be interesting to listen to.
Really, really cool. Yeah. They're talking about how Colin found out, because he's the grandfather of Kendama, so how he found out about Kendama, and it was through watching a ski video. And when I never was skiing and when I was young, but there was one ski video that was made by the same dude who showed, and this dude just threw Kendama in his edit in one of his ski edits, and that introduced Kendama to Colin Sanders, I think like Alex from Terra, like a bunch of people who started playing then. And so if I had only watched that other edit, I think like, oh, I would have started grinding. That would have been like really
good. Yeah, you would have been one of the OGs.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's funny that it started with skiing. Because was Kendama USA even a thing at that point? Like when was that company founded?
Colin talks about it, but it was, I mean, Colin started in 2008. And then I think Kendama USA 2010, 2011 maybe.
Okay.
And then 2012 is when they had their big Japan tour and they had Jake Weens and Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And then Colin Sander and Haley Bischoff. And Zach Yor.
I'm so far after that. It's so weird because I have like a snip. Like I remember that Colin Sander edit, but then I just like disappeared from it and I didn't hear anything about it until 2019. And then when I started looking at things in 2019, because then I was like older and I knew like, you know, I knew what social media was at that point. Like I knew how this stuff worked. And so I knew I was a skateboarder before I played Kendama. So like I knew about like Instaclips on skating and edit and skate edits and stuff like that. So that all translates to Kendama, you know, same ideas. So as soon as I got back, then I started looking up videos and I saw like D-West-D and Nick Gallagher, obviously, and like seeing the juggling, and that really like blew my mind, because that was especially like missing that gap where that evolution happened made me like, well, this is like nothing like what I remember. Like these people are putting lines together. I remember seeing one line where they did like a late trip sling in the line, and And then like kept on juggling, so Lighthouse Flip, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, wow, like what is going on here? This is like incredible. I had no idea that anything like this would ever be possible with a kendama. Like I thought it was just cups, you know, like.
Yeah. Okay, so once you saw that, you saw the possibility of kendama, and then that's when you started grinding.
And that is so the Colin Sander edit didn't inspire me to start back in middle school, but when I started in 2019 and I saw those videos, that really, and because I wasn't swimming anymore, that really gripped me. And I was like, okay, I need to learn how to do that because that looks like fun.
Yeah.
And so then I like started to learn how to juggle. I remember my first grind tricks were Whirlwind and Airplane 1.5 swap spike. That was like, because I was like, okay, I should be able to, and this theme is probably going to come up a lot in this podcast. I looked at those two tricks and I was like, I should be able to get these every single time, no matter what. I should be able to manipulate the Tama perfectly and flip it and catch it perfectly every time, no excuses. And so those two tricks I remember, because with the airplane swap spike, I was like, initially I was just like tossing the Tama up. And then I realized like, okay, well, I can flip the Ken and then give this a very specific toss so the Tama comes right around. And then I should be able to spike it every single time. So I remember those two tricks I really grinded before I started like branching out. Because that's kind of a big thing with my kendama like philosophy is don't overstep your ability. Work on what you've got right now, get it perfect, and then move on. And I think that like helps you progress so much faster.
Okay, yeah, that's really cool. So maybe you can expand on that, because I think maybe that's kind of the opposite of the philosophy of going for bangers where you get lucky and then you post, right?
Right. And so that's why I think that and the fact that I didn't make a Kendama Instagram until Gino forced me to. I think those two are related because I started Kendama absent of the, you know, pressure to like land a really crazy trick for other people. Like I was just like, okay, here are a couple satisfying tricks. And I want to be able to do them every time because they're satisfying and they're fun to land. There was no, like, for the first 6 months of my kendama playing, there was no, like, oh, I want to get this trick because it would be cool. And I think that other people would think it would be cool. Like, there was the first 6 months of my kendama play was completely absent of that.
And then what happened? Because it seems like you're impressing a lot of people nowadays.
Well, that's something I struggle with, definitely still to this day. I struggle with social media because I have never really been a social media guy. I kept Instagram because I think it's a really cool like scrapbook, like I said. Like I'm talking about like my main Instagram. I kept my personal Instagram because I love going back and seeing those pictures. But like I deleted all my like Snapchat, Twitter. I deleted all that back in high school because that is just it's just not very me, you know? And so
Yeah.
I still struggle with that a lot with doing kendama and wanting to film these tricks. And my second most recent post, the Nick Gallagher trick, the stilt flip, juggle back to stilt, insta stilt, dub, throw back to stilt, insta dub, trip. I had that was my most recent like conundrum with kendama because I tried
Crisis.
that trick. Yeah, crisis, like a philosophical crisis because I tried that trick over winter break. And with that trick, I could get to the two so often, but the three was just so hard that I couldn't finish it. But because I was so close, I was just like so desperately wanted to get lucky and just film it. And so I filmed it over and over and over again, and I never got it. And I really like, if you talk to anyone in the 608, I do not like filming. Like filming is not why I do kendama. I play off camera almost all the time. And if I film a trick, I set up the camera for 15 to 20 minutes. And if I go past that, I cut it off. And I never film for more than that because it just is too frustrating. And then I lose why I'm doing kendama. Then I start to veer into the I want to get this clip so I can impress other people. And I don't want to do that. Like it's really hard not to fall into that. but I have to like try and remind myself constantly to not fall into that. And
Okay,
so
that's
this
super
one, two,
cool.
three stilt trick, I was just like grinding it and I couldn't get it and it made me mad. And I don't really get mad at kendama anymore because I don't have a string, you know? And so there's no reason to get mad. And
So
so
true.
angry, and I had to like re like meditate on the idea of like, okay, I need to stop trying to film this trick and I need to just practice the three until I can get it good. And then I'm gonna put it together. And then when I ended up filming it, it took me 10 minutes. And so it was like just proof to me that it is not worth it to try and get lucky and get that trick. For me personally, obviously, this is just for me. Obviously, anyone can play however they want. But like for me personally, it's not worth it to try and get lucky and get that clip to post that Insta banger. You know, it's way more satisfying to practice the parts, like I said, practice the fundamentals, and then eventually put it together when you know you can get it within 15 minutes. And that is like my number one philosophy with filming. And it's hard though. Like it's hard to maintain. Like it's hard. And sometimes, well, not since that one, but before that, I told myself to have filming limits, but I made it like 25 minutes. But that was too much because then by the time it was 25, then it was like, oh, okay, well, let's just make it 30. And then after 30 minutes, I was like, oh, I'm so close. Just let me get a couple more attempts, you know, like everyone does. And so it's taken me a long time to figure out how to film like in a mentally healthy way. It's because I don't go well with filming. It doesn't make I don't like how it makes me feel about my kendama.
And what is that? What is it? How does it make you feel?
Angry, you know, like I feel like should be getting this. Like every time you film a trick, subconsciously it's because you feel like you should be able to do it, right? And so then if you don't get it, then you get that disappointment of, oh, well, I'm not good enough, you know, I suck. And I really don't like I get that after I film. Like I'm like, oh God, I suck. Why can I not get this trick? And I really don't like that. Like with kendama, it's kendama is hard, one thing. Like it's hard to land tricks on a kendama. Like it's a fluke thing, you know? And I just, yeah, I mean, if it makes me angry, like I don't want to be doing something that makes me angry, you know? Like it's okay if it has the potential to make you angry because then you care about it, you know? Like if it couldn't make me angry, then you know, it's like if you never fight with your partner or whatever, they say that's a bad thing. And it's like, yeah, because if you don't have a fight, then do you even really care what they think, you know? And so like I care about kendama, and so it can make me mad, and I accept that, but I would rather it not, you know, and I'm gonna take all the steps to make it so that it doesn't make me mad. Obviously, I have taken the extreme step of taking the string off forever.
This is funny the way that you put it, removing the string forever.
Fuck that shit. So dumb.
But people would say, and I'm going to say people would say, because maybe this is a little bit of me, but it's definitely a lot of the community, that there could be potential to master the string. Where your desire to be consistent with the trick doesn't only limit itself to the ken and the tama, it also can extend to the string, where you can hit triple ken flip, late ken flip to bird, and just know where the string would be every time.
There is a level to which you can master the string, almost certainly. We all know that because when we're trying new hard tricks and we're panicking and we're not nice and smooth like Gallagher level, you know, you feel the string getting tangled more. So I learned early on for sure that there are ways to mitigate the string, being relaxed, smooth, and maybe even to the technicality of moving your hand a specific way on certain tricks. But there's too much that you can't control. So I wonder if you'll agree with this. I found that with perfect relaxation, no panicking, the string gets in the way three or four out of every 10 attempts. That's kind of my diagnosis, is there's a way where you can get lucky, you know, like you can flip heads five times in a row. There's a way you can get lucky where you can have 15 attempts in a row where the string doesn't get in the way, maybe, not on a humid day. But ultimately, it's like 3 to 4 out of every 10 attempts. And that's just too much for me. That's just too many. That's just too much. That's too big of a chunk of the tries that are just for nothing.
Okay. Yes.
And I mean, Zach said that too. When you guys talked, he was like, no one can perfectly control the string.
Yeah. I asked him that on purpose. And I don't really know if you realize that it was a bit of a contradiction. Obviously he has other reasons to not play stringless. And again, you're not especially making anybody play any certain way of kendama. But I feel like general hesitations, and not just to single out Zach, but general hesitations to play stringless kendama are all relatively similar. Everyone kind of has the same ideas and arguments.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I talked to a lot of people about this.
Yeah. But especially what you were just saying about, what were you just saying? Not mastering the string.
Yeah.
Like, if you can admit that you can't master the string, then I feel like if you do value consistency, then that's mm-hmm. more of an argument to play stringless.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to Steelman the other side too, there is the one thing that's always brought up. I'm sure we'll probably touch on all of the arguments, because I would love to touch on all of the arguments on both sides and give my opinion of them, because obviously I try to be understanding of every side. And so I really like when I listen to people argue why you should keep the string on, like I really listen, you know, like I want to know exactly why. And one of the biggest ones is the idea of challenge. And well, you want it to be a challenge, don't you? And a lot of this stuff is sort of like, it's really complicated, like philosophical stuff where you're like, okay, well, how would you define challenge, right? Because there's one type of challenge where it's a difficult thing, but with practice, you can overcome it. And then there's another type of challenge where it's just hard to do it for reasons that are out of your control. So like the way I would rock climb, and I thought of this analogy, I was like, would you rather finish a rock climb that was really hard and you had to work on it for a while to get up the strength and learn the exact moves to do it? Or would you rather complete a decently hard rock climb where 3 out of every 10 attempts, someone just hooks a rope to you and pulls you off the wall out of no control of your own? It's like, which one would be more satisfying, to finish the one where you know that every single part of your practice went into it, or one where you just so happen to get lucky that you didn't get the attempt where something out of your control ruins it? And so there's different types of challenge. And whenever people bring that up, I always say like, well, I don't want that challenge where there's nothing I can do about it. If I can set it up so that I get the challenge where there's something I can do about it, that's going to be way more satisfying for me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think I'm trying to think of what people would say, and they'd probably say that, well, that random person pulling the rope isn't necessarily out of your control. But then that kind of goes back to what you were talking about, how if you wanted to do a trick 10 times in a row, you should be able to, but mm-hmm. most likely you can't. I mean, a good example is the form video that I did, the 3-tap, late 3-3-tap. Most mm-hmm. of those players without a string, like these are probably the best players to look at. Yeah. I didn't do any Japanese players, I don't think, but these are top players. Mm-hmm. And only Edwin did it first try. But these are players that know the string more than anybody, especially for this trick, because this is a very new gen trick they've done a million times for the most mm-hmm. part.
Lots of juggles, lots of movement with your hands back and forth. Yeah.
And nobody got it for only one. Edwin got a first try. But most players took
he's a beast. He's the goat.
Yeah, he's the goat. but most players took like between maybe a minute to 10 minutes to do it. And it's like, why? You know, like if it's not just that this trick is that hard, because it is hard for most people, but not for them. It has to do with the string, I think. And you know, mm-hmm. and I
whereas
I think,
if they had no string, they could do that trick three times in a row first try.
Yeah.
And that to me is just so much more satisfying.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think maybe part of this, part of your reasons for playing stringless, and your, I don't want to say promotion, but like your defense of it, is that the way that you think about kendama, like I really like the way that you thought about posting, and it goes beyond social media. It goes beyond of how you look at kendama, how you look at your abilities, your skills, life, mm-hmm. you know, where you don't want to get lucky with anything. You want to be able to have the skills to do it. And then you share a post that reflects your skills that mm-hmm. you worked hard to get to.
Right. Like ultimately, like my end goal with kendama is not to have this rap sheet of crazy bangers that I've landed. It's to be 30 alone in the woods, shirtless, barefoot, just doing kendama and just like landing everything, you know? Like that is my pinnacle. Like having this Ken and Tama and just being able to just do crazy stuff with it every time. And when no one's watching, like I don't care if anyone's watching, you know? Like I just want to be able to do it for myself. You know, like that's another thing is
shirtless though, like people, I mean, they'd appreciate that. They were watching.
I get hot so easily. I always have. And so I'm just like I'll be like here in Wisconsin, I'll be shirtless at like 45 if it's like just the right, you know, conditions. If I'm grinding 10 taps, like there's no temperature where I'll keep the shirt on, you know. At the at Battle of the Border on the Thursday jam, it was like freezing cold, and everyone was like, you know, everyone was just like shivering, kind of like hanging out and talking. And I was there seshing with Andre Goya, and we were just seshing taps. And we were like, I was like, I don't know about you guys, I'm sweating right now.
Yeah. Do you feel like the shirt is like the string where it kind of can get in your way?
So sort of like that is,
but I kind of have some like.
That's why I said that a lot of these stuff are like deep philosophical questions, because kendama sort of like reflects what's in ourselves, you know? And I really do think that taking off the string and being shirtless are sort of related, because I'm a very like a purist, you know? Like when I do kendama, which a lot of people would say that kendama without a string isn't pure, kendama with a string is pure, but we can get into that later. But I would never get a tattoo. I like my body how it is, you know, like I'm just like a human out here. Like I don't want anything like artificial about it, you know? And so when I go out and do kendama, I'm very like in nature, you know, like I'm like, okay, I'm like a primal human being out here, you know, barefoot, shirtless, like just in my running shorts, just playing kendama, you know. And to me the string feels so much more unnatural than just the Ken and the Tama. Yeah. It seems so much more artificial.
What about the argument for tradition and that this toy came with a string? You know, respecting the game of how it's always been played and how it came, and mm-hmm. that argument.
Right. Well, that's another definitional issue, I feel, because there's obviously Madi Meltsuleb performer team, you know, his Instagram, where they do these oversized kendamas with no string, you know, multiple Kens or multiple Tamas type thing. And I try to consider what I do as like a midpoint between that, where you have like the kendama with a string, you know, World Cup, like these are the regulations, this is what we train to, this is what we standardize competitions on. And then there's the multiple kens, multiple tamas, oversized or not, juggling, totally free flow, free style, you know. And then I'm kind of somewhere in the middle where, like, I know that I am not, I mean, I still do subconsciously, but I try as hard as I can not to compare myself to other people. Like, I just did 1, 2, 3 stilt tray, but that is not even on the same domain as Nick's 1, 2, 3 stilt tray. Like, and I say that, and I like, I'm maybe lying a little bit to myself on the inside, but I know on the outside, I'm trying to make sure I'm not comparing myself to those other people, because stringless is, it's in this kind of halfway category where it's a different thing. It's not even close to the standard thing. I mean, stringless is so much easier. You can do so many more things when you go stringless. And I will always acknowledge that. And that is why I try not to compare myself to other people. Like, when I see other people land banger tricks, like, I look at that and I don't think like, ugh, that's soft. Like, I could land that. Like, I think, I don't even think about myself. I think like, oh, wow. If I think back to when I had a string and I played kendama, like, wow, I'm not even close to landing that. Like, that trick is incredible. But for like a different reason than why my tricks are difficult, you know, like, they're two totally different things. You can't compare them. And I try to emphasize that whenever I talk to people, is like, I don't think I'm better than you. Like, I'm just different. It's, you know.
Yeah. What about the, like, back to the traditional argument, I think under that is like, oh, it would be like taking off a cup.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought hard about that analogy. And, you know, I mean, it's easy to make a bunch of analogies, and they may be accurate or they may not be, or they may be partially accurate. And here's the one I thought of is on the, cause taking off a cup, that's what Zach said in your podcast with him. And I was thinking of soccer, and I was like, okay, so that's like implying that taking off the string is like taking out the soccer ball or taking out the goals or something like that. Whereas I think it's more accurate to say that taking off the string is more like playing soccer with cleats instead of playing it barefoot. So the motions are all still the same. The motions, the balance points, the technicality, it's all still the same. It's just when you take the string off, or when you put the cleats on, you just have that much more control in your movements. Mm. But like I said, it's still all the same motions, you know? So that is, and the motions, I think, and the motions and the balances, I think that is the biggest part of it. That is way bigger than the string. So like another argument that I hear people say is, and I understand this, is, well, kendama is an integral, or the string is an integral part of kendama. So I hear that and I'm like, okay, yeah, I get that. But then when people are doing a trick and the string gets in the way, they say just that. They say, oh, well, the string got in the way. Well, it's like, well, the string got in the way of what? Of your kendama trick? So then subconsciously you're implying that you know that the kendama trick that you're trying to go for is ken and tama. And obviously there's like Jack Gilligan pinch tricks, Pinchy William, you know, and they're just nuts. And we'll just put that out to the side. That is a whole different type of kendama. I love that. I love watching it. I think it's super, super
but
cool.
They're doing,
I think they look
tricks, right?
I think they look beautiful, but we're not talking about that, because the fact is that 95% of kendama tricks that people do are ken and tama, and they know that when they say, oh, the string got in the way, well, the string got in the way of the trick you're trying to do, which doesn't involve the string in any way in terms of the balances or the motions that you're doing. So it's another definitional issue of, well, integral in what way, you know, like integral for the tradition's sake in that this is how it's always been, or integral in that what you're picturing in your mind involves the string. Like, because integral, like I would say, like a microchip is integral to a computer, you know, but like having a case around your computer, that's not integral to having a computer. So like when I see people say, oh, like it's integral to Kendama, but then they do tricks that don't involve the string at all, I'm like, well, that doesn't seem very integral to your Kendama play. It seems like it's on there because back when people sucked at Kendama, they didn't want to drop it over and over again. But now we can juggle with the Kendama. So the game has changed. We don't have to worry about dropping it anymore. We're all like skillful enough that we can keep this Ken and Tama up. We don't have to worry about dropping it anymore because people are crazy now.
Oh,
And we
hell
juggle
yeah.
with it. I mean, that was like a big, like a big turning point in Kendama is when we figured out how to juggle.
Yeah.
So
Do you see more people playing stringless in the future? Do you think this is the future of Kendama?
yeah, I you know what's funny is you asked Zach that and I didn't even think about that. Like I have not even for some reason, I mean maybe it's part of my philosophy, like I said, where like my ideal end point of Kendama is, or my ideal future of Kendama is not having a whole rap sheet of bangers that I can list off that I've landed, but it's just like being alone playing in the woods. Like I actually, when I do stringless, like I like to talk to people about maybe them trying stringless, but I for some reason you said that and I was like, wow, I did not even like think of that as an idea that more people would be playing stringless and then it would be becoming the standard. Like I didn't even think about that. But I mean, when I, after you said that and I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, yes. Imagine if that was the future of Kendama. I mean, because we think that Kendama is like going crazy right now in terms of the bangers that people can land now. Just think if the Gallaghers played stringless or if Takuya played stringless. Oh my
But
gosh.
Zach was
Like,
saying, like, there's no limit then. People would be doing 30 like Ken flips.
well, that's the other thing is when I yeah see stringless is interesting because a lot how you play stringless can really vary. So like I was playing a I played a stringless game of Ken against Joe Nelson when I went and hung out with Joe and Brody and Chris, and it was so funny because he was like, all right, fuck this, I'm not playing with a string, and I was like, yeah, do it, take it off. I don't yeah I, this is I encourage this, and he took it off. And the first trick he went for in our game of Ken was 10 single taps, jug, 10 late Kens, jug, 10 single taps, jug spike. And I was like, that's so funny that he picks up the stringless and he does that because that's what most people would do. When Madi came over at the Parthenon Jam and we were seshing stringless together, that's kind of what he did too, is he was doing like consecutive late Kens and stuff like that. Because most people would think like all that like stringless is just silly, you take it off and you can just do stuff like that. Well, yeah, you can, but I don't do stuff like that. Like I don't just do I like I when I'm seshing, I don't just do 30 single taps, you know? Like I still go for technical tricks. So that's where I think that when people first start doing stringless, it's like totally different than after you start to get used to it. So like when you first pick up and play stringless, you're really tempted to hold your hands out and like, you know, be like this and constantly be ready to catch it. And you're just gonna do like insta lighthouse flips over and over and over again, a bunch of late Ken flips, because people are like, you know, like even Zach said, he was like, oh, well, it's, you know, you can, and it still requires technique, like he acknowledged. You can just throw the tama up and whip like a fat late Ken, you know, and everyone thinks like that. Have you ever seen me do that? Like, I don't do that. So, you can do just like crazy, like ridiculous stuff like that. But I still would rather do 3-2-1 tap jug wing than, you know, 10 consecutive late Kens. So you can pick up the stringless and you can just you can play it so many different ways that, you know, like I said, people think like, oh, well, it's crazy. You can just do like a bunch of consecutive late Kens and it's, you know, it's just silly. And that I would say, you know, sort of is borderline silly, but I don't do that. You know, like I pick it up and I still try and do tech things. I still try and do spike taps. I still try and hone in my juggle stalls to try and get those perfect, you know? So there's so many different ways that you can even play stringless that I think that if people were to, like, obviously the first trick that Tiblex would do if he started playing stringless is like airplane 1.5 swap, late 8 Ken, jug late 8 Ken, throw back to airplane. But then after you play with it a while, you realize that just like with a string, that stuff is sort of boring and you were more gravitated towards the more technical things, even with stringless. So like, even though I play stringless and I could just do these like long, crazy lines, I still try and go for like tech fast hand stuff, you know, and things like that.
Do you think it's because I graduated when I do stringless, when I first started doing stringless, I was doing as many late Kens as possible. So I did exactly what Zach
everyone does. That's what everyone does. That's what you're
and
doing.
I wanted
you're like,
to
oh,
throw...
I'm finally free. Like, yeah. I don't have to worry about it anymore.
But I think it's maybe because my first reaction to not having a string is that, like, okay, I can, like, my first instinct is like, what got the string in the way the most? It was when I wanted to do 10 late Ken flips in a row, when I wanted to do like 10 late Ken. Are people underestimating the amount of times the string gets in the way? Or they underestimate, like, even if I'm going through 3-2-1 tap, jug, wing, they don't think about when the string gets in the way, right? They just miss, they miss, they miss.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you're going for 10 like Ken, it's like, obviously I can't throw the tumma that high with mm-hmm. my 12 finger string.
Yeah. Right. So like when, that's kind of what I was saying, like when people first pick up stringless, they have this like, oh, I'm free. And like you said, it's like, okay, what tricks was the string getting in the way the most for? And then they gravitate towards those. So that's why I think if stringless is ever going to become the future, which is where this started, people are going to have to play stringless longer than just one session. You know, they're going to have to play stringless and get through that sort of like honeymoon phase of like, oh, I can do anything now. I can just keep on going. And then they have to go back to their tricks that they're trying. And then they'll realize that, like, when you're stringless, it doesn't mean that you have to do the things where the string was always getting in the way. You can just play regular, like how you normally would, but now you don't have to deal with the string getting in the way of your favorite tricks, you know? So like,
yeah,
like inward lunars, like I never did inward lunars because the string is on the other side and it just that much more tangle just like really frustrated me. And now when you do stringless, like inward lunars are so much fun. Like they're such a fun trick. And especially with stringless. So I think people will like initially go stringless and do like the big long lines. But then if they were to just keep on doing that and then go back to doing what they love, I just think that they would find so much more love for the tricks that they do.
I think a good motivation to get people to play stringless, not that you're necessarily looking for that, but if I, you know, back to what I was saying, like if the next session that you play, just be aware of how often the string is getting in the way. I think if people mm-hmm. did that, then mm-hmm. very quickly they just be like, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's the thing too. Actually, I wanted to say one thing about the doing like 10 consecutive late Kens, because since I've been doing stringless, the topic of possibly doing stringless in freestyle has started to grow. And like you said, you're hosting an event where you're going to allow stringless freestyle. And I like that idea. And I like it more than I think other people would, more traditionalists would, because I think the traditionalists would think, oh, well, you know, I'm going to use a string and I'm going to get messed up by the string a couple times on stage. And then this guy is going to come up and he's going to do 10 consecutive late Kens. And he's just going to be able to, you know, not get messed up by the string. And he's going to be able to land so many more things than me. Well, as long as the judges realize that one person is playing with a string and one person is playing stringless, judge accordingly, you know? Like if I was going up against a Gallagher and he goes and they land fucking crazy stilt flips and juggle stalls and, you know, trip J's, like they're just so, so, so good at. And then I went up there, but the string got in the way a couple times and they messed up. If I get in there and I do 10 single taps, jug 10 late Kens, jug 10 single taps, like that's a stupid trick on stringless.
Yeah.
Like anyone who can do like single taps and late Kens, anyone can do that trick. So it's like, if I'm going up there stringless and everyone knows I'm stringless, like I'm going to have to do something next level if I want to beat someone who has a string.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to have to do like 10 tap, jug bird, throw, 10 tap, like jug spike fast hand. Like I would have to do crazy tricks to beat less crazy tricks with a string. So that's something interesting. Like I think if I did freestyle at a next event, I'd probably go up there with stringless and just say like, you know what? Like it's freestyle. Everyone has their own style and judge me accordingly. And I fully accept that if you land a couple tricks with a string and I land everything with stringless, I could very well still lose, you know, like I could still lose because with stringless, it's just that much easier. Yeah. So I thought about that too.
Yeah. But it also could be kind of like two different games, you know, like.
Exactly. So there's a lot more thinking to be done on that front for me. I'm in no way like, oh, what? Why wouldn't you allow stringless? Like, that's stupid. Like, I'm so far away from that. But I at least thought about like judging it accordingly and like, oh, there might be something there. Probably not, but
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I would hate to go up and compete freestyle with a string, like obviously me personally, because I hate playing with a string in general, but like I would feel so much more like I could express my style if I was stringless, you know, and that's exactly what freestyle is.
A few things I want to talk to you about. I need to write some stuff down. So it's super annoying to drop when you play stringless. You said you got used to it, right? I think people, their first session of playing stringless, they're going to drop it and it's going to make a loud noise. And then their wife/mom will yell at them. And then they'll like, okay, fine. You know?
Yeah, don't drop it. Get good, kid.
But like, what would you say to that? Do you get used to it after a while? I mean,
well, that's another thing is like, I heard Zach say, that, you know, he thought it was silly to see me like chasing my Tama around at Battle of the Border. And that for sure happened like several times, like certainly.
You see a Tama rolling by. And then
and then I was like, oh, well, help. And then like, throw it back.
They toss it back.
Which is like a funny interaction in itself. That does happen, but like, you watch me, like I probably drop it less than the amount of times that the string gets in the way. Like I drop it way less than people think. Like I catch it, and like Zach said, he noticed that when I play, I don't even keep my hands out anymore. Like I especially when I'm filming, I try to make sure that I don't like reach out, because I think that ruins the aesthetic of the string or of the trick. But when I play, like, I don't know, I don't drop it that much. Like I catch it pretty consistently. And if I do drop it, I've sort of like structured my mind to be like, okay, when I do drop it, I go like, take a deep breath, you know, do a little stretch. And like, I say like, okay, this is me forcing myself to take a little break, you know, which everyone needs when you're playing Kendama for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you need a second to like, I used to do that with, I used that same trick when like a huge gust of wind would come in when I played with a string. Like I would say like, okay, if I feel a huge gust of wind, don't try a trick. Just stop for a second and just like relax, yeah. Take a deep breath and sort of reset. So I don't drop it that much, you know, like, and not saying I don't miss, like, I'm just saying like, I catch it.
Okay.
Like it fall, like I'm not saying I never miss, but I'm able to catch it pretty often. Like, especially when I'm doing taps, like which is a huge part of my play style. I'm tapping it and it's like, it's right here.
Yeah.
And so if I mess up, I can just like, I can almost catch it one hand. Like I film a lot of clips selfie mode, you know? And like, yeah. Even when I'm playing selfie mode, I don't get mad at the amount of times I drop it. Even when I'm freaking playing, holding my phone like this, I'm still able to catch it like that because you have to get used to it. Like, and obviously it wasn't like that for the first week when I played stringless. But after a while, you're able to catch it a lot. And so I think that's another thing that people will have to realize if stringless is going to be the future. They'll have to realize that like you're going to have to go a couple days getting used to it and learning when to catch it. And because you can kind of tell in your attempts when it's about to fail, especially when you don't have the string, because you have so much more control over your kendama that you can tell when it's about to fail, you know? So dropping, like, it's an interesting argument because yeah, dropping it would be annoying a bunch. And definitely I wouldn't recommend stringless for beginner players, beginner or maybe even advanced or amateur players, like in terms of like the open rankings I'm trying to think about, you know. But like once you get to pro and you are able to juggle it really consistently and you have this like next level understanding of how your tricks are going while you're doing them, you know, you can catch it pretty dang often. And if you don't catch it, like I said, just take a breather, you know, stretch a little bit and take some solace in the fact that you get to take a couple seconds to just reset.
I imagine that playing with a string could be valuable when you're going for a brand new trick, because if you're going for a consistency trick, let's say like, yeah, 3-2-1 tap juggle bird. And so you have it down, you're trying to get it a lot of times in a row, you're trying to get the jug to bird down. Stringless would be nice because like you're landing bird or you're landing really close and you're just working on that last toss. Maybe if you miss the tap, it's fine. But if you're doing that for the first time, right, and you're missing the tap often, I feel like you're more likely to drop it. So do you see value in playing with the string in regards to that? So you maybe get more attempts in a sesh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, yeah. That if you don't have the motions down, you'll be less likely to catch it. So yeah, I think absolutely. If you're learning a trick, so that's one thing I say to people is like, I have never said to anyone like, oh, you should just take the string off and never play with a string again. But I thought, you know what? Maybe stringless isn't the future, but maybe going to the sesh with one strung setup and one unstrung setup, you know, maybe that's the future, because then you can, you know, like you said, when you're learning a trick, you can, well, yeah. And maybe it's different for other people. Now, what I just thought of is I had never ever done spike taps really. And I've been grinding spike taps lately, but I haven't been like noticing that I've been dropping it especially more. But that's like I said, with taps too, taps are easy to catch.
What about like triple Ken flip, late triple Ken? You're either going to spike it or you're going to miss it. I feel like the tama is going to fall off frequently.
If you're trying to do late trip Ken straight to spike?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one where you drop it pretty often. There's so much nuance to this, you know, that like there's certain tricks that I just wouldn't do with a string. Like I said, like doing like tap swap late Kens, you know, with no jug in between. Those are really hard with a string. The string gets in the way a ton.
Yeah.
But like, and inward lunars, like I really did not enjoy doing inward lunars with a string, but I don't enjoy doing trip J's without a string, you know? Trip J is one of those tricks where if I miss, I'm on the floor now. So I never do trip J's. I land triple stilt. I probably have triple stilt flip 3 times more consistent than trip J's. I've like done the, like, how many times can I get trip J out of 10? And how many times can I do trip stilt out of 10? And I can do trip stilt 3 times more often than trip J. And it's just because I don't practice trip J.
Way more impressive. So good for you.
well, it's just about what you practice though, right? Yeah. Like I never do trip J's, and stilts are a huge part of what I do. I fucking love stilts. And so it's just about what you practice. But for some reason, when you're doing stilts and you're trying to catch it like that, you're ready to catch it, and I'm not going to drop it. Whereas with trip J, I'm usually trying to do an insta out afterwards. And so if I go, so it's coming back in and I go for the insta, but it misses, it just falls on the ground. And then I'll get annoyed by that. And I don't do trip J's. So like dropping it is annoying, but I don't drop it enough for it to be annoying enough to put a string back on, right? Like it's like, what's more annoying, dropping it or the string getting in the way 3 or 4 out of every 10 attempts? For me, the string is way more annoying. Maybe that's just because I do tricks that are more conducive to being able to catch it.
And you know, I can imagine people are saying, well, you're only learning tricks, certain tricks, because you're playing stringless, you're ignoring other tricks. But it's a really easy argument to say, if we're holding these two things the same level, what tricks are you not doing with a string? Because it's annoying with the string, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is, I've thought about that recently too, is like, oh, well, I'm not, I feel, because with stringless, it's obviously the number one reason for why I'm stringless is consistency. And so the very like foundation of why I go stringless is not conducive to learning new tricks. It's to hone in the tricks that I do have. So I did think about it recently with my spike taps, where I was like, okay, I'm going to learn a new trick, you know,